So it's my great pleasure and an honor to introduce Lana Jack. So I first met Lana again when she appeared in this video that was shot by Robin White, and that's housed on the Thin Green Line is People History Project site. Lana also has another connection to WSU, and that she was actually a student at WSU in spring 2020. And it was a, you know, huge pleasure and honor to work with her. So Lana Jack is a Celila YM community organizer and the director and founder of the Columbia River Indian Center. She spent her life fighting for federal recognition of the Celila YM. Jack is a Coast Salish land defender, lobbyist, mediator, treaty negotiator, and jingle dress healer. And she'll be reading from her new short memoir that's just out in the Oregon Historical Quarterly. This edition, I think it just came out today. Is it out, Lana?
It is.
It is. Okay, how exciting. Yeah, and it's called We Will Be Here. The story of the Celila YM is one of mourning, resilience, and resistance. So please join me in welcoming Lana Jack.
Yay. Hello, everybody. Thanks for hearing me today and letting me share my heart. When I did the Green Line Project, I was deep into trauma. I had experienced such violence out in Standing Rock. It was really hard to bounce back from. It took over a year to bring me back from Standing Rock. The complex PTSD behind watching people get shot with rubber bullets up close was just too much. And my story is a lot. So I'm going to go ahead and start. I'm very blessed to have caught Ben Waterhouse, and he encouraged me to write my story. I was in Seattle, Washington, at the National Archives doing some research on our people. And much of what you hear here is real life accountings and events, my memoirs. So I'll just go ahead and get started. I am Heyuchpo, the ever-present Kulin mist at the falls. My English given name is Lana Jack. My Indian name is as ancient as the land, water, and air my people have coexisted with since the first dawn. We are the Wayampum, the echo of the water off the rocks at the falls people. We belong to the river. Our name is water, and Chivwana is the big river, also known as the Columbia River. It has been our home since time immemorial. We are salmon people. As long as the salmon are here, we will be here. When the salmon die, so will we. We have coexisted with our territories for millennia, interconnected by natural law that governs us and dictates our shared responsibilities to steward and be a voice for all those things created from the first light to we two-legged. We American Indians are often seen by others as savages, living in squalor for somebody else's dollar, violent drunks and addicts in need of law and order. Yet we are resilient in the face of centuries of ongoing genocide. At Wayamtuma, also known as Celila Falls, we were as free as the river. At the narrows, where the big river narrowed to 140 feet and cascaded a 20-foot drop, the salmon were so huge and so plentiful that Celila was known as the great trade center of the Northwest and beyond. At Celila Falls, we built wooden scaffolds tied off with horsehair rope. We fished with dip nets. We never knew lack. On the Big River and its many tributaries, we thrived on the abundance not only of but steelhead, sturgeon, smelt, eel, and trout. The sturgeon could pull a fully loaded boat for miles. We caught trout where Google's data center is today. We were all about subsistence. For us, wealth was about how much you could give away. The falls were iconic. It was inconceivable that they could ever be silenced. In 1855, the United States signed treaties with multiple Columbia River bands of Indians, the Wyam included. That promised us the right to fish, hunt, and gather food at our usual and accustomed places. The Middle Oregon Treaty of 1855 was signed by Stockett-Lye on behalf of the Wyampum, referred to in the treaty as the Lower Deschutes. Celila Falls was coveted by white settlers. They coveted the land, the salmon, the beavers, and the trees. Capricious new treaties rewritten to restrict us. The Treaty of the Middle Oregon, ratified in 1865, required any Indian to have a written permit to leave the reservation and fish, hunt, and harvest food from the land and the waters. The main staple of the survival of the Celila Wyam were criminalized. Although the Celila Wyam negotiated the Middle Oregon Treaty of 1855, we were not federally recognized. Despite many lawsuits and much legislation attempting to bring honor to the treaty, we are still waiting for fulfillment of broken promises. Today, we aren't even on the map. We aren't even remembered. Our land has been parceled away from 108 acres to 34.5 to what is now the 7.4 at Celila Village. Stockett-Lye, who signed the 1855 treaty, was succeeded by his nephew, Chief Tommy Thompson, who was born the year of the treaty, of the signing of the treaty, and became the great fish chief at the age of 19. He was highly revered and honored for his order at the great fishery. When the Bonneville Dam was planned in the 1930s, he knew our fate and that of the salmon. After the dam was built, the loss of return salmon was unprecedented. Chief Tommy Thompson lived to be 103. After the Dalles Dam flooded Wyam in 1957, the state of Oregon put him in a nursing home, parading him around town, displaying him as a prisoner of war for children of all ages to stare at. Tommy died in 1959. On March 10, 1957, the water of the Columbia River rose up and flooded the falls in a few short hours, burying our way of life, our primary food source, and our inherent sovereignty. That was the beginning of the dismantling of our remaining Celila Wyam people after war and pox. As the rising water silenced the falls, our matriarchs dressed in black, in mourning black, cried for days and nights, The violence of the flooding of the falls has been so overbearing for the people. We did not consent to the flooding of the falls or the stealing of our ancient sacred sites, and we protested the removal of the bones of our ancestors. We have been in perpetual mourning, each generation losing the battle. Our Indian names connect us to the land we are from. My granduncle Moses P. Shaoway told me, no matter where you go, your name will bring you home. Back here, you are YM. Go to China, he said, and you will have to dig your way back. My mom was born at the falls, her mother and her mother's too. I was born into this intergenerational trauma. I am one of only a handful of Salalah YM left who can trace our lineage via documentation. And yes, blood quantum, our great mark of pedigree. American Indian people are dying out this way after centuries of oppression and genocide. While there are 574 federally recognized tribes in the United States and more than 400 tribes that are not recognized by the federal government, many other tribes are fully extinct, and others like ourselves are at the tipping point of going extinct. I'm not telling you my story lightly. I'm not sharing this for greed or for fame. This is not easy for me. To talk about the pain and suffering we have experienced as Salalah YM, all due respect to my elders with their own stories, I will pay for this. There are people who are criticized and even retaliate. I am not safe in my own home for speaking out. There is a price to pay. But we are desperate to thrive, and we deserve justice. I don't want pity. I want action. One of the ways the oppressors ensure we have no power is by criminalizing our sacred foods, preventing us from fishing and hunting and gathering in our usual and accustomed territories. The Salalah YM are river people. We come from the river. Our brothers and sisters are the salmon, the beaver, the roots, the berries that grow here, all nourished by the land and water. Most importantly, the water. My dad raised us, me and my siblings, to have no fear on the water. Even at night, we fished 24/7. Summer days, we lived on the river and in the trees at the park. They were a part of us, our friends. Our daddy was a great fisherman from Alaska to the Columbia River and everywhere in between. We fished hard with our mom and dad and our uncles. There were only two boys, Leon and Lonnie, and four of us girls, Lila, Leah, Joanne, and me. Our dad's crew was all girls most of the time, all spaghetti straps, tube tops, and Daisy Dukes, styling in our fish boots. We hung and cleaned, patched nets, and when we weren't running them or guarding them. Because we lost our tribal fishing and hunting rights and sites, it was illegal for the Salalah YM people to fish, and it remains illegal. Even after the 1865 Huntington Treaty was nullified by Congress in 2020, the state game warden called my dad, the elusive Percy Jack. The warden said they could never catch him with fish and could never find him. When they tried, he had multiple close calls with the authority when I was growing up. There were six of us kids, our parents, and a in one tiny two-bedroom house. So I made my room in the closet. Under my bed was a manhole. One morning, I woke up to my dad's panicked voice yelling, "Get up! Get up! Get up!" He threw my bed aside, and he and my mom threw gunny sacks full of fish into the hole, along with a net covered in fish scales. He quickly changed and scrubbed off what mud he could, tossing his scaly clothing down with the fish. Soon, the state game wardens came knocking at the door, saying, "We saw you, Percy Jack." There I was, pretending to be asleep, guarding the manhole and our livelihood. My dad let them in, and they looked around, but they couldn't see. But all they could see was kids everywhere, sprawled out all over the house, probably a few cousins too. They looked under the bunk beds, but not under mine. They couldn't find anything. No fish, no nets, no charge. Another time, my cousin, my dad, and I got chased by the state game wardens. I was guarding the net while my dad and cousin took off to play pool in Rufus, Oregon. Both my parents were pool sharks. I was young, 12 or 13. It was cold, and the water was wild, and I was scared. At closing time, here came my dad in a speedboat with a 200 horsepower motor on it. I could hear them coming. They didn't even stop. They yelled, "Jump! Jump!" I had to jump onto the moving boat. The net was tied off the edge of the dam. They told me to cut the line and pull it in because we had game wardens bearing down on us left and right. Here we were in the speedboat, three people with a rather large net. My cousin Virgil Hunt Jr. was operating the boat. He threw the motor in reverse, ripping out of there as my dad cut off the rest of the net. Cuz made a U-turn and drove us to Preacher's Eddy, where there are rock islands. Virgil yelled, "Hold on!" And we went flying up on the rock island. He said, "Get the gunny sacks wet, cover the engines." The wardens use a heat tracking system, so we quickly... Please be quiet. We work quickly to cool the motor, and then we lay on the rocks. We shape-shifted. We disappeared. It's like we wasn't even there. The warden searched round and round us for hours. When they gave up at dawn, we had to work to get the boat off the island before we returned home to Celilo. It was just another one of those salmon scam moments. One more way we have been decriminalized and dehumanized for exercising our treaty rights. Our dad could have very well gone to prison over the salmon scam. My Utwai uncle, Chief Johnny Jumbo Jackson, at my brother's funeral, called my dad the infamous Percy Jack. He said, while everybody else had caught a case, your dad got away every time. Then he began to haul fish to his people in Lummi. We would have to sleep on a pile of salmon going down the road in our old station wagon, dripping slime all the way. And dad would say, "Smells like money." Because of the struggle for our fishing rights, my family was involved in the American Indian movement when I was 13. Running was my thing. In 1979, my mom, Mary Jack, helped organize a salmon spiritual walk run. The federal government didn't want to give us the right to harvest steelhead, So we protested. We ran from Celilo Park to Salem and then from Salem all the way up to Seattle Federal Building. I didn't have the right shoes for running that far, just my Chucky Con, so I got shin splints. There was no cushion between me and the pavement. I was introduced peyote for the pain. And I participated in the Native American church. My mom was not happy with me. The AIM song was our anthem. And I learned it on the big drum, which I helped carry. It was the first traditional song I learned because I was kicked out of the longhouse. I used to have to sit and listen to my elders all too often, Moses P. Shaway. He was a Vietnam vet set to war at the age of 17, who came home more traumatized than ever because the VA would not acknowledge his complex PTSD. He self-medicated with alcohol and cigarettes all of his adult life. He was the son of Minnie Shaway, Minnie Wesley Shaway. And he helped raise me. He called me, Mama! I can still hear him calling me. Moses would tell me to go howl at the moon with him as he banged on his trash can, singing the old chief's song. He understood a lot of languages, Chinook, Latin, Wasco, Sahaptin, because his dad, Abe Shaway, was a fluent speaker of them. Abe was a map maker for the Army Corps of Engineers, and he and many traveled with their delegates to designate our shared usual and accustomed sites from Celilo to Cascade Locks on both sides of the river. Our matriarchs negotiated a total of 6 relocation efforts to continue the genocide against us, to take away our lands, our allotments. As a part of the Dalles Dam settlement, individual Indians were given individual allotments. My allotment, where I currently live, is less than an acre passed down to me from Moses Shaway. It's not much. It's enough to connect me to my ancestors and the land we come from. The matriarchs and my family were leaders in the Celilo Longhouse before the flooding of the falls. In The Last Salmon Feast, a short documentary on the Celilo Wyam people, the Oregon Historical Society shared footage that depicted the way of life of the Celilo Wyam before the dam changed everything. My great-grandmother, Minnie Wesley Shaway, was named and recorded in the documentary as the leader of the woman folk, given her place of honor. I did not grow up with the knowledge my mother didn't practice our gathering, harvesting of roots or berries. I was taught how to gather roots and the first foods of my people from traditional food gatherers, anybody who would teach me. For the Celilo Wyam and many other regional river tribes, bands, and nations, food sovereignty is sacred and carries our songs and ceremony. That is what my people have died for. My mother was fluent in her language before she went to the boarding school. After, she never spoke her language. And she never grew her hair long again. Both of my parents were survivors of boarding residential schools. They never spoke of their experiences. Heinous crimes were committed against Indian children, their families, and their communities during this tragic era. This is the hour of acknowledgement. These crimes must be talked about, but it is not without pain for our elders. We need to protect their hearts and their stories. I say none of this to offend my beloved elders. Their locked away stories are invaluable and cherished. Our elders can help us all to heal. I ran away at the age of 17 and became a daily user of alcohol for several years. I had alcoholic behavior long before I took my first drink. I found a mate who beat me. I had grown up with it. In my mind, domestic violence was normal all too often. I called it love. It's in our shared histories, memories, the traumas of our people have been through. It's in our DNA. Alcohol and the driven spirit had me out on the highways, hitchhiking. It's a setup for us unprotected women to be the missing and murdered. I was almost abducted in 1987 after a stay in Multnomah County for stealing Pampers and baby formula. When I got out, I hit Interstate 84 to get home to Celilo. A long white van with no windows pulled up. Four men jumped out to attack me and throw me in. I swung my purse, mad crazy, in that moment, another van pulled over. I heard a man's voice tell the people in the van, "Stay here." It was the Hood River football coach. He had come to my rescue. I might not be here to tell this story. I was full of rage for all that my family and people and land have suffered. We survived genocide. I lost my children because of addictions. I was never deemed worthy of being a mom. But then I moved to San Francisco for treatment. After our fishing days, I got clean and sober for the first time years ago in Tacoma and stayed that way, even after my mother's death in 1992. I wanted to be loved or even know love. Today, I want to be love. I ran toward my healing and continue to run after it. Today, Jesus keeps me. Moses and Minnie Showay were Catholic and Washet. This made no sense to a lot of people. Church was where they did their best to assimilate and acculturate us. This left us very anti-Christ. But Jesus found me on a dusty powwow trail. It set me free. And I am forever grateful. Celilo Falls is not dead. My ancestor is very much alive. She's just filled with toxins. The fish are dying in this river. The fish and our other sacred foods are intrinsic to our existence. We are imprinted into our mother's memory. We are hers by song, by name, by language. The Celilo I am are becoming extinct right before your eyes. And this is what the government wants. So they can have whatever is left of our land and resources. They have made us non-existent. Reparations are in order, but we cannot be reconciled to a nation that never wanted us here. We have been subjected to unsafe drinking water all this time. The last relocation ending 2009, called the Fulfillment of the Promises, the Army Corps built a new water tower worth millions. The water inside remains the same, unsafe. We have new windows, but the sprinkler from my garden has covered the entire backside of my house with a white film. Recently, the tower ran out of water, and inside we discovered organic matter, red in color. My son got spinal meningitis when he was a baby after consistent ear infections. He became deaf because of the bacteria in the water. His paternal family told him he was deaf because I was a drunk. He has never called me mom. For that reason, I only drink purified water. My brother Lonnie used to call me a yuppie and stick his pinky finger out when I gave him a bottled water. The loss of relationship to our water is a void that only Berkey could bring back to me. Today, because of my Berkey water filter, I can drink the water at Celilo for the first time in 35 years. I traveled to Standing Rock as a prayer warrior. We were called protesters. Water is life, we chanted, Mini Wachoni. In the Lakota language, it rang throughout the village day and night. I danced with the butterfly fan as a jingle dress healer. They maced us, and people were shot with rubber bullets and doused with ice water. And below freezing temperatures, I have complex PTSD from the violence we experienced. It was war. We are in war still. Premature death stalks us. My brother Lonnie's last words before he passed away recently were, keep doing the work. I've been in service to our needs as the river people for almost 10 years. I have cried every day for my people. People in the village thought that my great-grandmother was a witch. She spoke in tongues and was a healer, using the knowledge of our traditional medicines that never got passed down. People paganized her way of being and knowing. My mother taught us girls to bead so we could go to the drive-in. Once I peered into her bead box and asked her, what is that? She said, those are beaver balls, the testicles of a beaver. Her granny used them to pray for women with fertility issues. We are the beaver clan as much as we are the salmon people. I had a stroke a year ago. I thought I was just having a blood sugar low. I'm diabetic. So I made myself a meal, took a spirit plate, and offered it to my granny's home site at Celilo Park. Then I got there, I was walking to the point of the eddy. I noticed an eagle flying overhead. It flew really low to the ground, so I raised my phone to take a photo and suddenly got hit with a dizzy spell. I began to truck back to my SUV. As I was walking, I noticed a walking stick that had been chewed on by beavers, and I picked it up. A few steps later, I fell into the river. It was windy and I couldn't move. It felt like there was an elephant sitting on my chest. As the waves crashed over me, I thought, Jesus, is this how I die, really? And then I heard a voice command, "Geared up!" So I dug my new walking stick into the rocks until it became stable enough for me to walk, pulling myself hand over hand up the stick. I stood, swaying hard back and forth when I heard the deep tone said, "Pick it up." I could barely stand. I reached down to pick up the waterlogged stick. The log was covered with visible faces of beavers, the mama, the papa, and the babies. I returned a week later to thank the beavers. I sang them their own song. I love you, beaver, beaver, beaver. Come say hi, beaver, beaver, beaver. They came out with the message that benzene is killing them and that the Columbia River is polluted beyond livability and to clean it up now. My ancestors said it all along. Our river will die. Today, this is more true than ever. Every spring, the beaver dies on the highway. It crushes me. Today, I am a beaver believer. Their existence is parallel to ours. They have been brought to their brink of extinction and have survived. They call us crazy, like St. Thomas, because we could hear from the other realms in which our Wyatt can live. We have been portrayed as heathens because of our connection, our traditions, our ceremonies. But that's what gives us our strength and our resilience to keep going, keep finding. I am so done with fighting. I'm about the healing journey, truth and reconciliation. But I will speak up and speak out on behalf of our people. We are not just somebody's sad story like the falls. We are still here. We love, we live, we fish, we pick, we dig, we sing, we dance. I know who I am. I am a woman of integrity and honor. I am Salalah Wayam and Coast Salish. And I won't stop speaking up until my people have their rights back and we are our own nation as promised in the 1855 treaty, able to see our own affairs, resources, people, land, and water. I believe in our lifetime, the river will run natural again, and we will be there.
Thank you, Lana. That was so powerful. Yeah, thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Lana? I do. There's so much to love about your story, Lana. But I'm wondering if you could say a word or two about Google, because you mentioned Google briefly in that account. And I know that that's a concern of yours is the way in which Google is expanding in the gorge and is sort of exponentially increasing their use of water.
Yes, it seems there was a lot of talk going on for years because Google didn't want to release just how much water it is going to be using. And that's just one data center. They proposed two more data centers here within the next couple of years, and they've already begun building. The Dallas City Council has consented to somehow, here's the deal, so Google bought the land and hence should have the water rights. Underneath where Google sits is an aquifer that comes down Chenoweth Creek, and there's a lake there. My ancestors, my great-grandmother, had gone on a journey with her husband, Abe Shaway, to designate this as our usual and accustomed trout site and our usual and accustomed sturgeon fishing site. And of course, there's no honor to the work that my ancestors have done, which is in truth very extensive. So the tribes haven't stepped up to say yay or nay. They have their lives back on the reservation, and I don't know, you know, how Google flipped our water situation on our own heads, because they were only supposed to use 175 million gallons, ended up using like 350 million gallons in 1 year. And now we have two more data centers going in. Where's the water going to come from when the aquifer dries? That's my question to Google. When that aquifer runs dry, I have friends who live up high where the water comes from. The headwaters of Chenoweth Creek has been leaving them without water for years now. So the Chenoweth Creek is already dried up. Who knows who's using these sites to make it all dried up or damming it up, or I don't know what's happening. But if the aquifer can't replenish from year to year, my only thought is that Google is going to start using the Columbia River water to cool their power stations, and then returning this hot water into the river means there's going to be no oxygen in the water for any life. Trout, sturgeon, steelhead, or salmon. Much less, I got pictures before Google even went in and started tearing up the land of all of the wildlife that was there before they started tearing it all up in there. Every kind of animal you could think of, I got pictures of it. They lived there. And with two new data centers going in, it's like 350 million gallons of water a year, triple that. Where's this water going to come from? I mean, they got their own sovereign reign. We don't even get to exercise our sovereignty or our sovereign say, for that matter, over this matter. But hey, water isn't life to them. Water is cooling these extremely hot data centers down. That's my take on Google's position.
Thank you, Lana. Does anyone have any other questions?
Well, I gotta say, I read Becoming from Michelle Obama, and that's who I fashion my story after. That's it.
Any other questions? Well, thank you, Lana. That was just such a powerful reading. It's really exciting to see your work in print. And, you know, you're such a great reader of it. You really are fabulous, you know, interpreter and performer. So thank you so much for capping out today's sessions. I know everyone's probably pretty tired. We've gone through, you know, many sessions here today, but that was just a fabulous cap to the day's event. Thank you so much, Lana.
You're welcome. I know that the footage we got on the different speakers on the 10 to 12 panel, and capturing them share their hearts on the salmon scam was pretty amazing. And the after talks after we got off Zoom were stories that they've never opened up and ever shared with anybody. So we'll maybe somewhere down the line get to present that as a documentary on the salmon scam.
And thanks also to the labor back there that we can see, Lila and Julian, who've done an amazing you know, have been just cooking up a storm, as Lana has as well. And so thanks for all that, you know, work to feed people and, you know, to make this a really memorable event. So.
Well, none of my people could make it in from all the in-lose sites because there's no fish in the river and that's their livelihood. And well, we need help down here. Yep. We need some reparations to take care of our people. They're sending our people way off and way off just to get renal care. They don't even have the money to do that. There's not many of us left, and that's my heart today. I'm just crying out for the Columbia River Indians, praying for them constantly for their well-being and their protection and their provision. But without a doubt, we live in extreme poverty down here by plan, by design. All right.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right.
Great. Good night, everyone. And we really hope that you will join us again tomorrow morning and, you know, for more amazing sessions. So, yeah. Yo, yo.